love Shakespeare? Well, let us count the ways. Do you realize the countless contributions that he's made to the English language? The words that are in the dictionary, the phrases that we still use today because Shakespeare created them? The word countless is just one of them. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today is the 450th birthday of William Shakespeare, and we will celebrate the Bard's birthday by talking with our go-to word wizard, Richard Lederer, and we'll welcome your questions, your accolades for William Shakespeare, or the words that or phrases that you use today, thanks to William Shakespeare. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Richard Lederer is founding co-host of Away With Words, which airs Sundays at 9 a.m. on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. He has written more than 40 books about language, history, and humor. His recent column, Let's Celebrate a Major Shakespearean Anniversary, was published over the weekend, and we have posted that on our Facebook page. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning here from San Diego, and you're worth getting up for, and I'm delighted that our listeners will be participating, and I think I'd add one other invitation. If they have a memory of Shakespeare, either seeing a play as an adult or studying it in school, and probably for many of them the days when you memorize passages and they'd like to give us a brief passage, I would adore that. We're having a great time here, Joy, celebrating this 450th. You know, he was apparently born April 23rd. I'm on speaker. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to ask you to go off speaker.
Right. I'm a speaker enough. April 23rd, 1564, because his name is entered in the baptismal registry of the small English village of Stratford upon Avon in the county of Warwickshire on April 26th. And we think then in those days, they waited about 3 days from the birth. And that's very convenient, Joy, because April 23rd is St. George's Day, the patron saint of England, and he died exactly 52 years later to the day, April 23rd, 1616.
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought, oh my goodness, happy birthday, Bard, but he also died on the same day that he was born.
That is correct.
And only 52 years old, but I suppose back then that was probably pretty old.
Not bad, and especially for a guy who wrote 37 plays, 154 sonnets, a bunch of poems, and essentially invented modern English. You know, Ben Jonson said of him, his contemporary, Ben, J-O-N-S-O-N, he said he, meaning Shakespeare, was not of an age but for all time. And I guess one of our goals today is to show that in so many ways that Shakespeare is alive and well on our stage, teeming our tongue.
So how influenced were you personally, Richard, by William Shakespeare?
Interesting question. I went to an inner city, I guess you'd say, ghetto high school. Never had to write an essay, but I happened to have been editor of my junior high school Lit magazine and my high school newspaper. And like Stephen Crane, Mark Twain, Ernest Hemingway, learned how to write journalistically. And in our senior year, we studied Julius Caesar, which Joy is scarcely taught these days because it's considered too masculine. Portia and Calpurnia have such small parts in the play. And we saw this writing that started with a capital letter on each line and didn't reach the right-hand side of the page. We were completely baffled by it. Rome, 44 A.D.,
what's this all about? It completely confused us. And then I became an English major at Haverford College and read about half the canon there. He is just seared into my brain. I mean, let's put it this way. You know that Rich Lederer loves language. Language is the highest achievement of humankind. And Shakespeare is the highest achievement of language. So he just writes so felicitously and so memorably that I just have dozens of speeches, hundreds of them, running around in my head, and I kind of use him in my speech all the time. And, of course, his themes, I see several plays each year. He's a big part of my life.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite play or sonnet or phrase that you'd like to share?
Well, Sonnet 73, that time of year thou mayest in me behold when yellow leaves or none or few do hang. Favorite play, probably Macbeth, and I taught it quite a bit in school. And a favorite time is here, and maybe you all can tell me what you're doing in Wisconsin with Shakespeare, which I think is a lot. But one of the great days for me is I'm on the board of the San Diego Shakespeare Society, and it'll be a little later this year, Saturday, May 3rd, in our beautiful Balboa Park on the Prado. We erect five stages. It would be lovely to have seven stages, the seven stages of humankind from Jaques and As You Like It. And on those stages, we have 40 excerpts of 10 to 15 minutes performed by Hormones Poured in the Sneakers. It's called the Student Festival. We have a bunch of schools participating, and they don't just read, they become the characters. And two of the schools last year, returning this year, are Marina and Maas, M-A-A-S, from Moscow, Russia. And Marina last year captured second place in the festival. And I emcee the central stage, the Rose stage. I have my own costume, Shakespeare, and I've basically been living in it. Today, for example, I'll be on the Hornblower cruise with municipal employees, county, doing Shakespeare, and then to a senior center tonight. And that's a typical day right now.
Wow.
Really celebrate Shakespeare here.
Well, we'll ask our listeners if you're doing anything special to celebrate William Shakespeare's 450th birthday. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, Richard, you are certainly our word wizard, but boy, that the Bard was really a word wizard. He created, as you said, he was a word maker. He would just make up words.
Yes, a neologizer and the greatest ever. Let's look at some statistics. First of all, he had the largest vocabulary up to his time, and in fact, for 300 years afterwards, exceeded only when we had James Joyce 300 years later. 20,138 dictionary headwords. That's 40% of the language that existed at his time, Joy, and he didn't have anything that you could call a dictionary in which to look them up. I mean, I'll put it this way. Nobody today uses 10% of the extant vocabulary, which is probably a million words. He used 40% with no dictionary. And to give you an idea, Milton had about 10,000, about half. The Homer had about 9,000. The King James had about 8,000. And here's the thing. Of these 20,138 base words, he made up, as you say, Joy, more than 8.5%.
Wow.
That's more than 1,700. Joy, when you read, or even better, hear and see in the plays, Shakespeare, you are witnessing the birth of modern English.
Give us some examples. I know, Richard, your column listed a lot of them, but some of the words that are in the dictionary today because of William Shakespeare.
Right. And as I read these, or at least toss them out, Joy, I'm sure people are saying, but wait a minute, how do you know that he made them up? And the answer is they're first Oxford English Dictionary citations, meaning, you know, the Oxford English Dictionary, I think it came out in 1927 after decades of work, but that wonderful Victorian manicness, and this one under Sir, James Murray, where they trace every word back to its earliest known appearance in print. And with Shakespeare, more than 1,700 are first citations, and you say, well, he was snatching them out of, you know, thin air. By the way, that's Shakespearean, what I just said. And he was just that they were there, but they weren't, because Christopher Marlowe, his contemporary, born just 3 months before, zero in the OED. Sir Philip Sidney, the Renaissance man, the courtier, zero. Edmund Spenser, who wrote The Faerie Queen, a contemporary, nine, including Braggadocio and Daring Do. Shakespeare, 1,700 and some, so I will read some. Ariel, amazement, auspicious, bedroom and bump, joy. Think how common those words are. First citations, either late 16th century, early 17th century. Shakespeare wrote basically from 1590 to about 1613. Critic, exposure, generous, lonely, majestic, monumental, pious, premeditated, radiance, road, OMG, road, R-O-A-D, sneak, submerge, useless, notice how common they are. And then if I may, beyond that, the compounds, meaning two words that are sort of soldered together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to do the first half, B into L, so first half of the alphabet. Bareface, civil tongue, cold comfort, eyesore, faint-hearted, fancy-free, foregone conclusion, father time, fair play and foul play, green-eyed, half-cocked, heart-sick, high time, hot-blooded, itching palm, lackluster, laughing-stock, leapfrog, lie-lo, long-haired, love affair. All Shakespeare. And it ends with my own bliss with yeoman service, but that striking compound that Shakespeare himself fashioned to describe Don Adriano de Armando in Love's Labor's Lost becomes an appropriate epithet for the playwright, playwright himself. He is a man of fire, new words. You witness the birth of modern English, you know, moving from the Middle English of, let's say, Geoffrey Chaucer, 1340 to 1400, when you encounter, if you'll allow me to be a little bit levitous, Willie Wigglestaff, because Willie Wigglestaff is William Shakespeare, wiggling the staff, shaking the spear.
We are talking with Richard Lederer. He is our own word wizard about another word wizard, William Shakespeare. Today marks the 450th birthday of William Shakespeare, and we are welcoming your birthday wishes, your favorite plays or sonnets or memories or words and phrases that are a part of our language today because of William Shakespeare. We've just heard many of them. Do you know others? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
See how she leans her cheek upon her hand. Oh, that I were glove upon that hand, that I might touch that cheek.
Now me.
She speaks. Oh, speak again, bright angel.
Romeo, Romeo. Wherefore art thou, Romeo?
We are talking about William Shakespeare and why we owe a lot to William Shakespeare on his 450th birthday. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Richard Lederer, who is the founding co-host of Away With Words, which you hear Sunday mornings on the Ideas Network. And we are welcoming your memories, your questions, your thoughts about William Shakespeare and his contributions to the English language. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, you know, Richard, I think that a lot of people, when they think of Shakespeare, think of Romeo and Juliet is one of the first things I see on the list of words that Shakespeare created. Courtship.
Yes, Romeo and Juliet. To give you a sense of the universality of this man and his innovativeness, how many authors could you do this with? I'm going to do a little quatrain, a little comedy quatrain, meaning four lines. 'Twas in a restaurant they met, Romeo and Juliet, but he couldn't pay the debt, so Romeo'd what Juliet. And everyone out there in Wisconsin public radio land gets that. I'll bet you most of our listeners saw the film, was it about 10 years ago, Shakespeare in Love?
Yes.
And that was the one where Judi Dench won Best Supporting Actress for 8 minutes on the screen. And part of the kind of orgasmic enthusiasm and joy is that they were witnessing the very first time that a playwright depicted, a storyteller depicted, flesh and blood and bone and hair love. What I mean is, before that, all stories of romantic love, quote-unquote, were essentially the bodying force of stained glass windows and stylized altarpieces. Tristan and Isolde, of course, with Chaucer and Geoffrey Chaucer and so on. And here you have these hormones poured in the boots, a 20-year-old and a 14-year-old with the hots. And they just go, well, wait a minute, you can't do a play about this. And he did. And in addition, he violated the Aristotelian unities that mixed the comedy and the nurse, for example, in prose with the iambic pentameter tragedy that we see happening. And it was so new. This is the universality. I am running around and I have a huge picture, you know, the famous kind of lithograph of Shakespeare, and I put it up on the lectern when I'm speaking. Everybody recognizes it. How many authors can you put their picture up and recognize? Hemingway, I guess. Jane Austen, I don't think so. Emily Dickinson, I don't think so. But Shakespeare, you put that picture up and you see it. And I'll just give you one more example. A recent story in the New York Times, March 31st, the Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan. And these unfortunate Syrian families confined there, and amidst the darkness and the bleakness and the deaths and the uncertainties and the malnutrition, the families get together and they perform King Lear. And as the false-hearted daughters, Goneril and Regan, falsely in an Iago way praise their father, the audience shouts, "Hypocrites, liars!" And as the true daughter, Cordelia, tells it like it is, they cheer her. And this is their brightness in these terribly makeshift costumes. A very moving story, and this is Willie Wigglestaff for William Shakespeare in Our Lives.
Let's take a call from Connie in Arcadia. Hello, Connie.
Hello. I'm just delighted with your descriptions. 10 years ago, I went to the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona, their first season, and I don't even remember what play I saw, but I fell in love. I had no idea that I loved Shakespeare. I'm about, today I sign up to usher. I can usher, you know, as many times as I want, so I get to see the plays. They do two plays every year in repertory. They're doing Shakespeare, or doing Hamlet this year, and The Merry Wives. And it's absolutely to die for. They're professional actors, and I just want to thank you yeah. for this show and thank William Shakespeare. He's just the greatest.
Yeah. Well, you are a great lead-in, I think the point is when you say, I didn't know that I love Shakespeare, Shakespeare wrote to be acted. There was no, he made no effort to preserve his manuscripts, and thank the gods for Cordell and Heming, who 7 years after, in 1623, after his death in 1616, put together the first folio, and so now we can have him move and just be part of our being. It's funny, Joy, mentioning Hamlet and Mary Wise, one of the great questions is, which character in Shakespeare speaks the greatest number of lines? And most people would say Hamlet, and that is true if you confine yourself to a single play. Hamlet dominates that play, and it's a rather long play, at least relatively. But Falstaff is the answer, because he's in the Hank plays, as we call them, the Henrys, and in Merry Wives of Windsor, so it is Sir John Falstaff. This is a good bar bet for you listeners out there who speaks the greatest number of lines, and just listen to the passion of that woman, and apparently that festival is going on now for 10 years. He was not of an age, but for all time. So long as men can live and eyes can see, so long live this. And this gives life to thee. And Shakespeare continues to live and give us life.
And we are talking about how William Shakespeare continues to live on what would have been his 450th birthday today, talking with Richard Lederer. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
And the question to you this hour is, what do you love about William Shakespeare? Do you have a memory or a favorite phrase or word or play or sonnet? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Jonathan in Kenosha is with us now. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, I wanted to share my passion for Shakespeare and his ability to show us the full range of human complexity. I love the quote from Hamlet, where Hamlet's giving the instruction to the actors and saying that the purpose of playing both at the first and now was and is to hold as 'twere the mirror up to nature. I just find the character studies in the plays so rich and wonderful. One really good use for Shakespeare that I've found is in providing a positive activity for prison inmates. And in 2004, I started something called the Shakespeare Project at Racine Correctional Institution in Wisconsin. And it's King Lear the first year, and that actually was covered in the New York Times. And then the second year we did Othello, and then The Tempest, and then Julius Caesar. And then we took a hiatus for a few years, but now we're back. And in fact, tonight we have a dress rehearsal for something called Shakespeare's Mirror, Scenes and Soliloquies. The inmates are using scenes and soliloquies as a way to look at their own lives, and it's kind of exciting.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that, Jonathan. What sure. benefit do you think the inmates get out of this program?
Well, I think there's two very different things that are complementary. One is simply the discipline and practice of creating good theater, studying the lines, working with the language, and working as a team to create something beautiful. That is huge. Then on the other side of it, using the language to reflect on their own lives. And I've made that more intentional in the program by having them do first straight Shakespeare, meaning just perform, in this case, the scenes and soliloquies. And then a month later, they're going to perform their personal stories that were inspired by these Shakespeare pieces and that resonate with them. They will be using Shakespeare as a mirror, so to speak.
What do you think of that, Richard?
Speak the speech, I pray thee. Just, I know that with, I've heard prisoners say, this Shakespeare saves my life. This is wonderful. And again, and a little bit of echoes of that Sitari refugee camp, he frees us. And we just heard to be and not to be, the fourth of and central of the seven soliloquies, the soul as in solo meaning alone and loke meaning to speak. And here's a brief story of Hamlet and phraseology. A student who attended a performance of Hamlet came away complaining that the play, and I'm quoting, was nothing more than a bunch of cliches, unquote. And the reason for this common reaction is that so many of the memorable expressions in Shakespeare have become proverbial. And just in that play, one play of the 37, Joy, brevity is the soul of wit, there's the rub, to thine own self be true. It smells to heaven, the very witching time of night, the primrose path. Though this be madness, yet there's method in it. Dog will have his day, the peril oft proclaims the man. Neither a borrower nor a lender be. O frailty, thy name is woman. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark, more honored in the breach than the observance. Hoist with his own petard, Joy, that's a bomb, sometimes a rocket bomb that blows up in the face of the engineer, the maker himself. The lady doth protest too much, to be or not to be, sweets for the sweets, the be-all and end-all, to the manner born, that's M-A-N-N-E-R, not M-A-N-O-R, and more in sorrow than in anger. One play, those phrases.
Just amazing, just amazing. Let's take a call from Camille in Frankfort, Michigan. Hello, Camille.
Hi, thank you very much. I wanted to ask Mr. Lederer if the words that Shakespeare invented followed any pattern or route from the English that existed at the time, or did he just pull them out of the air?
Ah, said, of course, out of thin air is indeed one of his, as I mentioned. Certainly, in some cases, he just changed the part of speech through providing what we call morphemes, meaning bearing elements. So, for example, with majestic, the word majesty existed, but not the adjective-making ick at the end. And the same with amazement. Amaze existed. Or laughable, laugh did, but not the A-B-L-E, just to give some examples. But in other cases, and he did that a lot, so he took a lot of the material, what we call meaning-bearing material of the language, and added, but in some cases with words like critical and bump, he just seems to have made them up out of whole cloth, so to speak, or no cloth at all. So that would be the answer. That's a wonderful question. I can't claim to be an expert there, but he took the material and he just added, and sometimes, as with R-O-A-D, road, he just made them up, and the same with snake. So it's both.
When I said that's amazing, I see one of the words he invented, amazement.
That's right. Yeah. Ament is a French noun generating suffix, and he added it to what was the verb at that time. And the amazing thing is that people obviously understood it. The plays were very popular, and even the penny public, presumably not all that highly educated, who would stand in the pit and watch the plays, they had more patience in those days, didn't need the seats, would understand. He just somehow was so in tune with our ears that he could do that.
Let's go next to Stephen in La Crosse. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Yes,
this
go ahead.
This is Dr. Steve Copps in La Crosse. I want to thank you very much for this program. I think Shakespeare's meant a lot to me over the years. And I remember in high school, we had to memorize things from Shakespeare. And as we remember those things, it helps our lives to be so much richer. Yeah. I remember going camping and saying something like, now my co-mates and brothers in exile, hath not old custom made this life more sweet than that of painted pomp? Are not these woods more free from peril than thy envious court? Here feel we with the penalty of Adam, which in the churlish chidings of the winter's winds bite and blow upon our bodies, even till we shrink with cold. We smile and say, sweet are the uses of adversity. Mm. What like toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in its head. And this our life, exempt from public want, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, and good in everything.
I think As You Like It.
I'm sorry, Stephen, did you respond
Steve,
to that?
Steve?
Well, yes, and I remember being when we were camping.
Right. It's from As You Like It.
Oh, I can't remember. I think it is, but I'm not sure.
Yes, and that is the play in which we have Jaques, all the world's a stage and all the people on it merely players.
Yes.
And each one in his life and so on. And a lot of people think that's Hamlet, but I'm almost sure the tongues and so on is the comedy As You Like It with Rosalind as the heroine. Strong female parts.
I wonder. And Stephen, you remember that from when you were memorized that as a child?
Yes, in high school. And several others, but that's my favorite. But I think we've lost the requirement of memorization.
Yes.
And I think that's too bad in our schools. But then the important thing, too, is that our teacher would then explain to us those words that we might not understand, like the precious jewel in his head. And there is a gelatinous substance at the base of the brain of the frog that was medicinal. So it was a precious jewel, but without some of that understanding, you don't get the full flavor of what Shakespeare is saying.
Right. I mean, Shakespeare did need some explaining, did it not, Richard, when we were kids?
Oh, yes. And we had the Shakespeare. So a little bit of a follow-up. This verse is now in Steve's DNA, and that was quite a long passage that he had memorized. And it is an iambic pentameter, meaning five da-dum, five what we call iams. And in memorizing it, it's become part of him, and he hears that rhythm. And iambic pentameter is kind of the most natural kind of line in our speech. Today, you can just go to the Internet and immediately see the lines, but you don't have the sound of the language woven into the warp and woof of your persona. And here Steve, when he goes camping, because you know what happened is Rosalind and her gang, Celia and so on, they had to go out and flee into the Forest of Arden. And so hence that speech. And now he's out camping and hears this. And it's just lovely. And of course, typically, you know, I do a lot of public radio, and Wisconsin public radio listeners are special. There just is a humanity there that I adore. That's why I love being on with you. And by the way, Rob in the afternoon, Ferret, of course, was, guess what, producer-director for the show. I had many wonderful years with him, and nice to hear that he's doing Central Time. He's got a great voice for radio.
Well, thanks, and I'll pass that along. On Central Time, Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert will also be celebrating the Bard's birthday, and you can hear more about that this afternoon. I'm trying to see what hour. I think it's the 4 o'clock hour. They'll be talking with a Milwaukee actor and director who brings Shakespeare to life all over Wisconsin. That's coming up after 4 on Central Time. We are talking about Shakespeare's 450th birthday by talking with word wizard Richard Lederer about the mark that Shakespeare's left on the English language and the reach that the Bard has had beyond the dictionary, and welcoming your questions, your favorite plays, sonnets, memories, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
My name is Shakespeare William. I owned a feather quill. I am the writer most familiar to you.
We are talking about William Shakespeare and the contribution that he has made to our English language, and welcoming your questions and your favorite words, phrases, plays, sonnets of William Shakespeare. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Rudy in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, Rudy.
Howdy. Hello, Richard.
Rudy Talsky.
That's me, yeah.
Oh, I love this man. Yes, Rudy, what's up Shakespearean-wise?
Well, a couple of questions you could answer. One, of all of these Shakespearean plays that you've seen, which did you like the best? Where and how was the best performance? And the second
We have the Globe Theater here in San Diego, and I loved Othello. I've loved them all. They're exquisitely mounted. We just have a very special area here. We have this wonderful Globe Theater. One of my favorite plays is Antony and Cleopatra, not much seen. So it would be a bunch. And your next question, sir.
Would the people in Shakespeare's day, when the plays were performed and he was making up words, if you will, would the people have understood them?
It appears so, because they would see the familiar morphemic, meaning bearing elements, material. So it seems as though it did resonate with them, as far as we can tell. Otherwise, he wouldn't have kept doing it, and they wouldn't have hired him to do it. The other thing is, remember, in those days, the verbalness, I mean, it was the spoken language that was so rich. It is an incredibly rich time for growth in the English language, the Renaissance, the rebirth of the classical values. So we think that people were just very verbal and could understand it. Another wonderful question. Great, Rudy.
So do you and Rudy go way back, Richard?
Well, we do, and it's true. We met at one of my appearances for Wisconsin Public Radio. Rudy was it in Eau Claire, I seem to remember, and we've been in touch ever since.
Yeah, a couple of times. The other question was, what does your costume look like?
Well, you know what I'm going to do? When we're through, I'm going to send that picture to Bill, and if you all could post it, it would be great. I'm going to send you that picture. You'll see the hat and the costume, and I am made by a fan of mine, incidentally, fashioned, and
we will do that. Thanks very much. We'll post that on our Facebook page, and perhaps we can get it on the website as well. Thanks very much, Rudy, for all those questions. Now let's go to Lee in Winona. Hi, Lee.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's your question or memory about Shakespeare?
I'm the managing director at the Great River Shakespeare Festival, so I have many, many memories of Shakespeare. But what I wanted to add is, while his language was stunning and breathtaking, and it's true, he was also a really good writer in terms of plot and character.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we really, really appreciate is that heritage as well. I mean, we wouldn't have Game of Thrones if it wasn't for him.
Is that right, Richard?
I believe so, mm-hmm. And we wouldn't have knock-knock jokes either.
Oh, give us one.
No, and I'll tell you what I mean. Act 2, Scene 3, Macbeth, after the horrendous murder of King Duncan by Mr. and Mrs. Macbeth, and the porter, there's a knocking from the outside world. Knock, 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 who's there in the name of Beelzebub? Knock, knock, who's there in the other devil's name? Knock, 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 who's there? Never at quiet. We think that is the precursor of the knock-knock joke.
Oh, funny. So why do you think that plays written by William Shakespeare, 400-some years ago, are still so popular today?
Are you asking the caller or Richard?
No, I'm asking you, Richard.
Well, I think our listeners have summed it up well. Sorry. He really understood the human heart. The language is stunning. It's just how could anybody write like that? And yet it is so perfect. And he treated every rung of the ladder, the social ladder, And this is why people say, gee, how could Shakespeare have written that? High school education, never went abroad, and yet all of this stuff about other countries, particularly Italy, and court, how could he do that? Well, I think it's a futile path to follow, because he's just so extraterrestrial. I have a favor as we get to the end, unless you want to take some more callers.
Oh, I will, but what's your favorite?
Okay, well, my favor is
You
just had somebody sing, and I wondered if you could give me about 2 minutes to sing a Shakespeare song to the listeners.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
All right, as long as I don't have to. All right, we have time. So what song is this?
As long as you don't have to hear it, I get it. Right. Well, you know, this is from Kiss Me, Kate. Based on The Taming of the Shrew by Cole Porter, and the two hoods come out, and in the movie they were Keenan Wynn and James Whitmore. And I'm going to do my New York accent now, so here we go, everybody. The girls today in society go for classical poetry, so to win their heart, one must quote witties, Aeschylus and Euripides, but the poet of them all, who will start them, simply Raven, is the poet people call the Bard of Stratford-on-Avon. Pink, brush up your Shakespeare. Start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare, and the women you will wow. Just to claim a few lines from Atella, and they'll think you're a hell of a fella. If your blonde won't respond when you flatter her, tell her what Tony told Cleopatra. With the wife of the British ambassador, try a crack out of Troilus and Cressida. Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow. Forsooth, all kowtow. Odds, botkins, all kowtow. Bum, bum.
Very good. Bravo, bravo. So why did you pick that song?
I think it's a nice review of Shakespeare. It's light. It's another example as to how he inspires us. He's ever new. You know, so many of the Shakespeare plays are in modern dress. They've been modernized. People say, is that corrupting the bard? I don't think so. And he modernized with Julius Caesar. He took Plutarch's lives. He took the life of Caesar and Brutus and so on, put them together, made something new of them. His eternal summer shall not fade, if I can quote from one of the sonnets.
Let's take a call now from Daniel in Rice Lake. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. Brevity is the soul of wit. Has anything more been said in four syllables than by Shakespeare's Julius Caesar in Latin, et tu, Brute?
Et tu, Brute, yes. Then fall, Caesar. No, wonderfully concise, and that's it. Yeah. How could anybody say it better? It's exactly what you say. I have to tell you, a student, one of my student bloopers wrote, Julius Caesar died with these immortal words upon his dying lips, eat you, Brutus. And we laugh because we know about the et tu, you see, so we can play off of that. That's the wonder. Yes, eat you, Brutus.
Daniel was saying that was brevity, but it was also humor?
No, there's a little humor with Polonius. And by the way, if there's somebody who isn't brief, but full of, I'm quoting Shakespeare, windy suspiration, it is Polonius. And that's his advice to Laertes, his son, and one of the great characters. Iago and Polonius are probably the two most duped. And I think the daughters of King Lear, the first two, are the terribly duplicitous.
And George in St. Germain is with us now. Hi, George.
Hi. How did Shakespeare make a living? Was he licensing his plays to some companies or selling manuscripts, or how did he make a living?
Definitely not selling manuscripts. He was simply paid by the theater that was actually his first one, the Globe, the Swan. So he made his living. They would pay him to write, and he would get a take of the house. but definitely not selling his manuscripts, and they would not have survived without that first folio, Cordell and Heming, about 7 years after, in 1623. You know, playwriting, it was all lowlife then. They didn't allow women to act for decades. That's why we have such rich language in the love scenes, because they couldn't be physical. They, you know, had to do it in language. And you didn't write this stuff down. And now, of course, it's the noblest monument to our language.
We have Andrea on Facebook who writes, "My love for Shakespeare was nurtured by American Players Theater and the Wisconsin Shakespeare Festival that used to be held at UW-Platteville. I once was part of an online discussion about whether or not Shakespeare wrote everything himself. That discussion brought me to Ireland, to a privately owned castle called Castle Matrix, where Edmund Spenser wrote The Faerie Queen and where Walter Raleigh planted Ireland's first potatoes. Shakespeare brings you places." So
Lovely. As I say, the authorship continues. I actually enjoyed seeing the film Anonymous, which postulates that Edward de Vere, Earl of Oxford, wrote it. Of course, the inconvenience is he died in 1603, and we have plays for 8 or 9 or 10 years later. But interesting that, you know, this controversy does swirl around us. I am so pleased, Joy, that you all are doing this today and apparently on Central Time. Joy, I'll just mention this. We live in a nation in which only 30% of colleges and universities require the reading of Shakespeare, get this now, for their English majors. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine the percentages for everyone. Only 30% have to read Shakespeare as an English major. And obviously, from what I'm hearing in Wisconsin, the Bard is alive and well, and not for an age, but for all time. So long live this, and this gives life to thee. And we're keeping the flame alive. And we must. It's who we are. It's in our collective DNA.
That's a good place for us to leave this celebration. Richard, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Richard Lederer, founding co-host of Away With Words, which airs Sunday mornings at 9 on the Ideas Network. He's written more than 40 books about language, history, and humor. His recent column, Let's Celebrate a Major Shakespearean Anniversary, was published over the weekend, and we have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And when he sends us his photo of himself in Shakespearean costume, we will also post that as well. Thanks very much to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.